Hey, what's up, everybody? It's Dirt. Want to thank you for taking some time out to listen to the podcast of our show, brought to you by Les Schwab Tires, doing the right thing since 1952.
The 2-1 hit in the air right field. Judge going back. Judge at the track near the wall, and that one is gone. Just snuck over the right field wall. Christian Vasquez drops it over the right field fence. A solo homer the opposite way, and the Red Sox lead it 4-0.
This is Dirt and Sprague.
Marner takes a look. Now Riley. Matthews from that spot scores.
And it will be his second of the night and 7 on the year.
With Andy Dirt Johnson and Brendan Sprague.
Echeverria edging away at second. Walker at first. Kimbrel has the sign. The 1-2. Swing and a little dribbler towards third. Nunez charges, picks it up, throw to first, out at first, and it is over.
Dirt and Sprague on 1080, The Fan.
All right, it is 12:01 in the Rose City. It is time for Dirt and Sprague on Portland Sports Leader, 1080, The Fan. Brandon Sprague, Andy Dirt Johnson in with you on this happy hump day. Feeling good. I'm currently in a conversation involving a sport I promise not to talk about.
No, it's okay. I'll give you permission today because I brought it up and put it on the big show board.
I have a, it's nothing that like nobody's ever brought up before, but I'm currently talking with two other radio hosts that I'm friends with about what your starting five would be of current American white basketball players.
Oh, like just in the NBA?
Yes.
Well, Gordon Hayward probably has to be in there. Is he the best white player?
Him or Kevin Love. Kevin Love a little more cred.
American white players, right?
American. So I have Kevin Love and Gordon Hayward.
Can I throw Jimmer Fredette in there after last night? Just pouring in 41 on the Rockets, playing for some Chinese team?
Can I say one thing to you?
How about the efficiency of 41 points and 40 shots?
I wouldn't go down this road because I will derail the show.
Don't derail. Just keep it in the ballpark
okay.
Here, okay?
No, you can't go. Jimmer.
Okay, let's just not go
the
out of the ballpark.
The Jimmer is not in yet.
The Jimmer's not back. Okay. I mean, I'm not putting any Blazers on there. I'm not gonna
no,
go that
but
far.
I had a former Blazer in there.
Former
in my five.
Luke Babbitt?
No.
Who's another former white Blazer that I'm forgetting?
I'm gonna say it, and you're gonna go.
Mason Plumlee.
Mason Plumlee.
Yep. He's my center.
Okay, so there's
he
your three.
He can pass, he can move.
There's your three, your four, and your five with Gordon Hayward, Kevin Love, and Mason Plumlee.
Right, let's see if you can guess my one and my two of white American basketball professional players.
They have to be American. So like a Goran Dragic doesn't count.
No, he doesn't count. There's one obvious one you're just forgetting for whatever reason.
Well, it's been a while since the NBA has been around.
4 months.
And I don't watch a lot of non-Blazer NBA. You know this.
It's coming. Well, this guy you watched quite a bit in your life.
Watched quite a bit. Steve Nat? No, he doesn't play anymore.
He was Canadian.
Canadian too. Damn it. Watched quite a bit of this. Peyton Pritchard's not there yet. Easy. Hold your horses.
Nah, I don't know if Peyton Pritchard's an NBA player.
Hey, you bite your tongue.
By the way, I have a Steve Nash side note when you're done guessing.
Okay, nice. Yes.
All right. More basketball.
Tangent.
Look at us.
Well, I get a rope soccer into this, too.
Oh, so. God. Damn, what is happening?
Okay, that's fair.
We're getting to baseball in 10 minutes. Everybody's going to
change
the channel.
Come on, this one is an obvious
one. I'm not going to guess
this. He's been in the league forever. He has turned the narrative about him around in an A-Rod type level.
He's been in the league forever. I know it's. I'm not going to look at the Better You Today text line because I'm sure it'll be all over.
Line.
Do you know who he's talking about,
Swagger?
I actually don't.
Okay.
I'm blanking.
I don't know.
I want you guys to noodle. So this guy has turned the narrative on himself A-Rod-esque.
Well, Mike Bibby's buff, but he isn't playing the league anymore.
He's also
not white.
That's right. Damn it.
Yeah. So
is Larry Bird still around?
I'll give you one more hint.
Okay, give me one more hint. If Swagger can't get this, then I'm not going to get this.
He had a late addition of tattoos. In his life.
J.J. Redick.
People like J.J.
Redick
now.
How did I connect that dot but not turning the reputation around?
I don't know.
Redick at two.
Tattoos.
So who's the point guard?
Are there any white point guards?
There's a white point guard.
There is one, huh?
I'll give you a hint. Real close to one of the guys in my starting five. Real close there, Bob.
Is it the, what's the kid's name from Arizona?
Yep. T.J. McConnell,
thank you.
McConnell, wow. Redick, Hayward, Love.
That is an awful basketball team.
So the follow-up to this is...
Yeah, but could they beat the Blazers?
Yes.
Well, they could.
The follow-up to this, you know, what is your starting five thing? What would the team's record be? Would they make the playoffs? I didn't do a record. I just saw that, but I didn't do the record. I said,
but you have Myers coming off the bench draining threes. You have Collins coming in, you know, playing a little post offense.
You got some Ryan Anderson in there somewhere.
Ryan Anderson draining shots from all over the floor.
What
is
about Luke Kennard?
Luke Kennard,
from Duke. He just got drafted last year.
We got Stauskas now, too.
What about the other Plumlee? What about Cody Zeller?
Did you see, by the way, did you see Stauskas's nickname? It's like saucy something.
Well, it's because he created a hot sauce.
He did?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, Sauce Stauskas.
Really?
Yeah, look it up. When he was in Philly, he did sauce.
He learned something new every day.
I thought you saw that story.
That guy's
years
got a
ago.
Love of sauce. No, yeah. I just saw Joe Freeman wrote the story on him.
Sauce Stauskas.
He's a big sauce guy, and he had the nickname in the headline. And I thought, what? Who gave him that nickname? Is that a self-proclaimed nickname?
Yeah, it's kind of just a hey, this is what he's doing. Let's just give him that label.
How do you get into sauce?
I don't know, but I kind of want to get into mustards.
You want to make your own mustards?
Because I love hot sauce, but I also have a real deep affinity for mustard.
Can we name your mustard on the show today?
Sure. I'm okay with that.
All right.
Like, I like all kinds of mustard. I'm not a picky...
You like all mustards?
Give me American traditional yellow mustard. I like spicy brown. I like the...
You're into the Dijons?
The grain, the Dijons.
I'm a big Dijon mustard
guy. The honeys.
Guy.
Like, I'm all in on the mustard.
Yeah, honey mustard's solid.
But no, you had to do, would the team make the playoffs with the five?
That's a no, Bob.
I said in the East, I think they could be an 8 seed.
I'm going to go no,
Kevin
Bob.
Love, Gordon Hayward, J.J. Redick, T.J. McConnell, and Plumlee couldn't be an 8 seed in the East.
What do you got coming off the bench, though? Your bench is awful.
No, no, no. It's not a bench question. If you just played five players.
Oh, we're just playing five guys?
If you just
played
five players.
In this hypothetical?
Right.
All right, maybe I'll give you the 8 seed, but I'm not going to up you that much higher than
no
that.
No chance in the West.
No chance at all in the West.
No, 0%. 0%.
What the hell happened here?
I don't know. But did you know Steve Nash is back on TV?
He is?
Yes. Didn't know if you knew this, but the UEFA Champions League, so this is the Super League with all the best club teams in all of Europe.
Okay.
So the best Spanish, Italian, Premier League teams. Their TV contract is now with Turner. Their games are on TNT, which makes no sense. But Steve Nash, and Bleacher Report is part of it, BRTV or whatever.
Right.
Steve Nash is the studio pre-halftime and post host for the UEFA Champions League coverage on Bleacher Report.
Well, he was
Steve
a really good soccer
Nash
player, though.
Is?
That was always his thing. Remember the Amari Stoudemire dunk contest? He did the lobs with his feet. He did an alley-oop with his feet.
I do remember that, yeah.
He's a big soccer guy.
Big soccer dude.
I tune in to hear what Steve Nash has to say about soccer.
It's like, who is the other guy, the former basketball player that was the NASCAR guy?
He played for Carolina.
Brad Doherty.
Brad Doherty. He was like randomly on NASCAR coverage on ESPN just because I don't think he did. He ever drive? I think he just really was into the sport.
I think he liked the sport.
They gave him an analyst role on ESPN.
For ESPN, I'm Brad Doherty live from Charlotte.
What are you talking about?
He had a little
bit
of that southern twang when he talked.
Just a hint
little
of
bit.
It.
You'd be like, oh, Brad Doherty, huh?
A little bit of that Marty McGee in there. By the way, people are saying Grayson Allen can be our enforcer coming off the bench.
Ooh, that's our Draymond.
Yeah, we need some. Somebody to trip guys.
You need a little enforcer.
He's dating himself a hottie, by the way.
Grayson Allen is?
Google Grayson Allen girlfriend.
Okay.
You thank me later.
There was one other one. Oh, Rashad brings up Joe Ingles. No Joe Ingles, huh?
I thought he was Australian.
He's Australian.
Touche. Touche,
yeah.
He is.
Yeah.
Because I would, you know, if he was available, I might go big point guard.
Who texted that in?
Rashad did.
Tell Rashad to stop being racist.
Yeah, that's racist.
Pale skin does not mean American born.
He is Australian.
We get it, Rashad. Okay. You don't get sunburned like us.
We had somebody just advise us to think about Duke too when we were thinking about the white players, and he was right. Plumlee and Redick.
Yeah, yeah. I know. Yeah, there's two Dukies in there. And McConnell, I mean, the way he played in college, I hated
could have been
him.
A dookie.
He should have been a dookie.
He would have fit right in
he
with
He would
Coach
have been
K.
the modern-day Bobby Hurley.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was a random... I don't even know where that tweet came from, but I randomly got tagged in it. And I was like, you know what? I'll play this fun game. Season's looming.
What the hell, man?
Show sheets ready. I'm ready to do a radio show and talk about football all day.
No, I'll give it to you. The NBA season begins a week from tomorrow.
Yes, it does.
It officially tips off a week from tomorrow.
About time. About time.
You're that hungry for it?
I am, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. You won't hear me bring it up, but yeah.
I caught a snippet the other night. I can't remember if it was last night or the night before. Probably the night before. Well, I don't know. But I caught a snippet of that basketball love story documentary. Oh, I haven't
dove in yet.
I saw, I was like, oh, that's right. We interviewed the director. I'm curious. So I dove in, and they were doing some stuff on the ABA, and it wrote me in for a good 40 minutes.
ABA, NBA stuff.
Dr. J, yes, Afros. Very,
the merger was interesting.
It was fun, man. Yeah. It was a good flick.
By the way, for the people that don't like basketball, and there's quite a few of you out there, and that's fine. I get it.
See, people like basketball. I think it's Warriors are going to win. Nothing matters.
Oh, okay, but like withholding that conversation.
There's also it's football season. Can we wait till like Christmas?
Right, I get that. But sure. I'm just saying, isn't this kind of like a perfect time though? You're getting playoff baseball, you're getting NFL, college, and basketball. Oof. And then hockey for those out there who love the ice.
You got a Stanley Cup rematch tonight.
You see what I'm saying though? You have
Vegas,
five sports
and Washington.
Going on. Five sports.
Yeah, we're in the sweet spot right now. What do they call it? The eye of the storm of a hurricane? We're in that thing.
We're in
right
the sports
now.
Zone.
We are in the zone.
It's called the sports zone.
Okay, I'm with you.
All five are in.
Can we hit all five sports today? We already hit basketball. Check. Knock it off.
You just mentioned hockey. We mentioned soccer.
I think we need to dive a little more into hockey.
No, I don't.
That just was a mention.
I think we dove in. We said who's playing.
I had hockey in the open. Austin Matthews leading the NHL with 7 goals in 4 games.
The great American hope. Speaking of white Americans, Austin Matthews is the American hockey hope.
Plays for the Oilers.
Nice try.
No.
At least you got a Canadian team.
You did. He is in Canada. So
he
I'll
plays for...
You know who he plays for. I've shown you Austin Matthews highlights before.
Hold on. It's not the Oilers, but it's Canadian team.
Yes.
It's... I keep wanting to say...
it's not the Canadians, no.
No. It's not Montreal. It's the other... It's a small team.
No.
Edmonton.
No.
Not Edmonton.
You already
said
Edmonton.
Oilers.
You already said that one. It's not Calgary.
It's actually the biggest team.
It's not Winnipeg.
The Maple Leafs?
There you go!
Hey, come on down.
Did he just sign with the Maple Leafs?
He got drafted.
No, they drafted him.
He's a stud, man.
Who's the kid I'm thinking about on one of the other teams?
I don't know. Connor McDavid with the Oilers?
Yeah.
Connor McDavid.
Look, I'm reading
my
his mind.
McDavid.
I know he
yes.
knows like three hockey names.
Yes. That's one of them.
McDavid.
He is a stud for the Edmonton Oilers.
Boy, look at us doing some sports trivia today.
What else do we got?
Listeners are like, hey, I know a hockey name.
We
hey.
Have Sebastian Blanco named MLS Player of the Week for the Timbers. From last week.
I can't wait to watch him in a couple weeks.
Yeah,
that's
going.
Right. You're going to the last home game.
We're
a week,
the game.
From, week from
week from Sunday.
Sunday.
27th.
My trainer's got, I told him he's got to bring me a scarf. I'm going to be scarf guy.
Yeah.
21st.
How do you 21st. Do you wave it around 21st. Your head like a helicopter, like Petey Pablo? How do you do it? How do you do the scarf?
I think only the shirt applies to the Petey
Pablo. Do I have to hold it up? Does it say like, no yeah. pity?
No pity. That's
go
when
home,
there's a. That's when there's an opposing player faking an injury on the turf.
Oh, so that's going to happen quite a bit.
Fake injuries, huh?
Your arms
Timber's
are
going to
get
Timber's going too much tempo. Guy's got to lay down.
Exactly.
Wow.
Yeah, so when there's somebody that takes a dive, you hold up the no pity.
No pity in Rip City.
I see what you did there.
No,
I can't
wait. In the Rose City.
Rose City, yeah. Yeah, Rose City.
Wow. Can I call it Rip City? Is that
by the
a
way,
problem?
Somebody has a good name for your BS Mustard.
Well, I don't know if I've thought about that. People wouldn't take it seriously.
I think I would.
Would you?
Yeah.
What about no BS mustard?
We were in North Carolina on a family trip a couple of years ago, and we went to like one of those like random spice shops. You know, you can go around and they have like regional spices and stuff.
Sure.
And they had a spice that was just simply called the Good S. It's basically like a Lowry's like seasoned salt, but the name of it was the Good S.
Yeah.
And we bought some of it and brought it back.
Was it good?
I mean, yeah.
It wasn't the good S, though,
no,
right?
It wasn't the best S I've ever had, but it was good.
But they got you to buy their S.
They did, and I think BS Mustard would get people to buy it.
Maybe I'll run with that, then.
I wonder what this guy's got going on in
Maybe
his mustard.
Maybe I'll run with that. All right, it's going to be a good show today. We've got a lot of football we're going to dive into in the NFL, college football. We will start to break and get into the breakdown and get into the Oregon and Washington game a little more. Hear from Chris Peterson today. We got Statter Story at 2:15. But let's start the show with some baseball.
Let's go.
How about that ninth
baseball
inning last night? Yankees-Red Sox. As the Red Sox move on to the ALCS, we'll start there. Dirt and Sprague with you on 1080 The Fan.
Part of it.
Wow, Music Master just taking shots at the
what? It just happened to be a coincidence.
Randomly in the rotation.
I can't believe that played.
I just love Frank Sinatra.
Should we let Frank go a little more?
I think we should. I love Frank.
I love this song. Turn it up for the Yankee fans. Come on, Yankee fans.
York, that's low.
Join
New
us. York, yeah.
The Yankees. I want to wake up in a city that doesn't sleep.
They got all offseason to sleep now.
They slept
and
last night.
Find I'm king of the hill.
No, you're not.
Top of the heap.
That's so low. Well, hey, what do you do, you know? Aaron Judge started it.
That's true. Aaron Judge did.
Did you see him playing this song last night, yeah, celebrating?
Yeah.
Good for Boston.
Yeah, it's fun troll, man. It's, yes, a great rivalry. That's how you want it to be.
Yep. And the Red Sox almost coughed it up.
That game wasn't great, in my opinion, until the ninth inning.
That game sucked for eight innings.
Astros should be licking their chops.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know about that. I think this is going to be a really good series.
Yeah, but there's some vulnerabilities now, though, I think, with Boston.
If they can get into that bullpen for Boston in the fifth or sixth innings.
You're using a starter. I get it in a game five situation, but they brought Sale in for the eighth, not having confidence in some of those arms.
Why did he not keep him out there?
That, to me, was the biggest. There's a lot to break down from the end of that game because the start of it wasn't great. Bad umpiring. You know, Red Sox jumped out to a lead. Yankees couldn't get anything going on offense all the way until Kimbrel just handed it to him. But I think that's a big lesson for Cora to learn. And I think a lot of managers in baseball have to learn it the hard way, that when you get to this point in the season, you just have to throw the book out. Like, there's not a set standard on how you have to manage games and how you have to use a bullpen and the way that you should operate. Just because you have a closer and you used him all year and it's the ninth inning and you're supposed to use your closer, it doesn't mean that you have to go to him. And I thought that was a pretty big mistake on their part. It was already a little risky bringing Sale in because he's scheduled to throw, or was scheduled to throw, in game five of the series. Yeah. He was going to start for him. And at that point, the way he just steamrolled through him in the eighth inning, what did he throw, 13 pitches and got three outs? Are you kidding me? I'd roll him out there again in the ninth. He gives up a couple of hits. You got a three-run lead. Then you can say, okay, maybe we should bring in Kimbrel.
Right.
But at that point, keep it going. I thought that was a big mistake. And thankfully for Boston, it didn't cost him. And maybe he's learned his lesson
Well,
now.
I think Cora, I think you get this with a first-year manager who, by the way, had an incredible season. And Boston's offense and everything they were able to accomplish this year with, what did they finish, 108 wins.
Yeah.
It's a learning lesson, and it's a time to reflect going into the ALCS and say, all right, if I'm in that moment against the Astros, do I go to Kimbrel or do I trust Chris Sale to just close out a series like that? He may go to Sale. Maybe he really trusts Craig Kimbrel though. Like, Kimbrel has his moments like he did last night. Trust me, I know, as a Braves fan.
Dude, that was awful.
But he'll also go through long stretches where he's almost unhittable.
He will.
And so I think part
in
of
a seven-game series, though, that can swing it if you have one of those games.
No doubt.
They were lucky that it was first a three-run lead and that he got a lot of help from some of those hitters.
Well, yeah. I mean, what was Stanton doing?
That at-bat is the one that's going to – he's not going to be able to sleep all offseason.
You can't be the $300 million man and have those two bad swings. Those are inexcusable. Yeah. Those pitches were terrible and never close to being over the plate.
Yeah, they were about 2 feet outside of the strike zone.
He was going so hard for his Yankee hero moment.
He wanted the Aaron Boone moment.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, he did. He looked at his manager and said, you had a moment. Why can't I have a moment?
But he hit a three-run dinger right here.
And he took the wrong approach on it, and he cost his team. And I know they still had another, what was it, out or two, but...
Yeah, that was the first out of the inning. So they had the first two guys on. He walked the leadoff. He walked Judge on four pitches. Then Gregorius came up, and he almost hit Gregorius. And then Didi also swung at a pitch that was bounced in the dirt. He was just sitting on a fastball, and he didn't get one. And then with two strikes, he singled through the right side. So they had first and second, nobody out. And those are the moments, like when you're on the on-deck circle and you're seeing a pitcher that walked Judge on four pitches that probably should have walked Didi if he didn't help him out and swing a pitches outside of the strike zone. I know Stanton had a strike one called and a good slider on the inside, but after that, you just make him throw you another one. Make him prove it, because he was all over the place. And if he just simply would have been more patient, the next three pitches were out of the strike zone. So either you're sitting in a 3-1 count and you get walked, or you're sitting in a three-one count, and he grooves you the fastball that you're looking for to try and hit that three-run home run.
Right.
Swinging a pitch is out of the strike zone. There were a couple of those. Sanchez did the same thing. He came up, first pitch was out of the strike zone, and he flailed at it. It's like, what are you doing, man? The guy was walking. He was hitting people. He couldn't find the zone. Let him cause his own trouble. And thankfully for him, he got a couple of guys to bite at some bad pitches.
Well, so now they eliminate New York. New York is done. Bye-bye. They're gone. They lose in four. And now you get a great ALCS. I'm not 100% certain the NLCS will be great. Dodgers winning by three games, I could see it going the other way with the Brewers as well. I really do believe the ALCS is going to be a really good series. I know the experience of Houston, and they can prove me wrong, and I get the pitching.
But I just think this Boston team is different. I think they're built for it, and I think we have ourselves a hell of an ALCS.
Parcello was great last night. I
he
think
was
that
really
gives you,
good in five innings.
That gives you some confidence as a Boston fan. I'm with you. I'm hoping. I think both series will be good, but I'm also hoping that both series will be good because the divisional round sucked.
It was terrible.
There was one good moment from each series that I can think of. You had last night, the ninth inning. Prior to that, the Red Sox were kind of in control of game one, and the Yankees won game two, and then the Red Sox blew them out in game three. You had that drama in the ninth, so you got that. The Braves got smoked in the first two games, and then they had their grand slam, and that was a fun game. But then the game four kind of got away from them late, and they blew it,
right.
Blew the lead. And then the Brewers and Rocky series, you had the walk-off in game one, and other than that, it was – did anybody watch any of that? So – it's kind of a sluggish start for baseball in the division series, and I'm hoping it picks up a little bit now in the next round.
Yeah, so your ALCS matchups, you got Boston versus the defending champs, Houston, and the Dodgers are back in the NLCS, and they take on the Brewers. Some get a couple days off before those series start, too.
People, by the way, are pointing out the douchey level of Kimbrel. We got some anti-Kimbrel folks out there.
The beard?
Yeah, Dickard says, I don't think we talk enough about how big of a D-bag he is on the mound. What is he doing up there? And then another one
are
is...
you talking about the windup or the beard?
I think
he does the arm hanging out thing when he looks down, and I always thought that was weird when he was in Atlanta.
And somebody said, is Dirk going to go after Kimbrel for doing that stupid-ass pose every pitch? It's the douchiest thing I've ever seen. It is pretty weird.
That beard's terrible.
I'm
a guy that can't physically, like, honestly, I genetically cannot grow a beard. I'm not capable. So maybe you don't take my opinion on this, but I was sitting right next to a guy who had a monster beard.
It's an awful
And he
beard.
Looks up to the TV and he goes, who's that guy? That beard's terrible. And I was like, yeah, I have always thought that. It's bright. It's like, it's bright red.
It's one of those, like, some guys can grow the playoff intimidation beard and have it look good.
His is not intimidating.
How is there not somebody in his life that's like, dude, just...
He looks like he needs a shower.
You're going to want to get away from that.
I bet you he's got bugs in there somewhere.
There's something, yeah. A lot of leftover food.
Are we getting a World Series rematch, or are you still trusting your Brewers?
I'm sticking with my prediction. I think the Brewers to me are the most underrated team left in the playoffs because nobody watched them.
Well, not according to Alex Bregman.
True, but yeah, I know, because they didn't have any primetime games. Guess who also played three-day games? The Brewers.
Yeah.
They didn't get any night games. So, I mean, that's just the way it works. I mean, nobody paid attention to this year. The Yelich addition was huge. Lorenzo Cain is an experienced veteran center fielder. They got power hitters up and down that lineup. The back end of the bullpen is lights out. It's one of those, the Brewers, I think the series will come down to for them if their starting pitching can have the success they had against Colorado. The Dodgers have the advantage in starting pitching with the way Kershaw threw. Ryu has been lights out as of late. Rich Hill. I mean, they have the advantage in that department, but the Brewers, I think, have the better back end of the bullpen, and the offenses to me are pretty similar. It's going to be a fun series, but I'm sticking with Milwaukee.
All right, ALCS, NLCS, we gear up for that one and see who's going to go to the World Series. Is the Pac-12 already eliminated from the college football playoff discussion? One writer seems to think so, but why? We'll talk about that next. Welcome back in, 1232 on The Fan, Portland's sports leader. Not all undefeated records are created equal. An article on ESPN.com written by our good friend, Heather Dinich. Pretty connected with the college football playoff. She basically shows you who stands number one through X on like a probability to make the playoffs this year.
It's a good breakdown. It shows you the toughest games remaining on their schedule, the kind of landmines that might exist.
Percentage chances if they lose a game.
Yeah, it's a good breakdown.
Like she gets Alabama, and I don't know who the loss would be, but just as an example here, Alabama's favored by at least 80% in each of its remaining games. And even if they were to lose right now today, still a 65% chance they would still make the playoff. That doesn't, I think, surprise anybody. What surprised me just a little bit was you go down this list, you get Bama, Ohio State, Notre Dame's running the table right now. Clemson's playing well. We know Georgia's a really good football team. She goes to the dark horses after that. The top I just read are the favorites. Then she goes to the dark horses. West Virginia's in there. Yeah, I could see that.
As they should. They're undefeated.
NC State is a team nobody's talking about. They're undefeated.
Mm-hmm.
They're having a good year. Long shots. Those are her dark horses. Now she's going long shots. Colorado, UCF, South Florida, and Cincinnati. She doesn't list Washington. It's literally Colorado or bust for the Pac-12 conference.
Yeah.
It's not about undefeated. This is about making the playoffs. This is about, will they be in that conversation? Washington's not even listed as a dark horse with a probability percentage if they run the table.
Right.
She gives probabilities for all these teams that this is where they're at. If they lose X game, this is what it is. They're not even listed. And I think you look at this conference, do you think it's Colorado or bust?
No, I think it's bust either way, unfortunately. I think the Washington stuff and the Football Power Index is still giving them a 12% chance at making it, which is actually higher than what they're giving Colorado. So everybody's going to have a different metric depending on how they're looking at it. What the difficulty is, and I've said this since the opening week of the season, you're now asking a team to run the table. That's hard. I don't care how good you are. I don't care what conference you play in.
Right.
That's brutal. You just saw it with Oklahoma. Oklahoma just lost to Texas. Texas is a good team, not a great team. But if Oklahoma had played a tougher non-conference opponent and lost, their season would be done. And that, I think, is the difficulty right now that the Huskies face and Colorado faces. I don't think Colorado's going to run the table and make it. Hell, they might even lose this
weekend.
I don't
think they're going to stay undefeated.
At USC. That's a really tough ask. And for Washington, they haven't really even got into the meat of the Pac-12 schedule yet. And there is already some concern about a handful of their games. They were close against Utah, tried to give it away. Utah didn't have enough offense. They were close against Arizona State, much closer than some people expected. It was a 17-point spread. They only won by a touchdown at home. This past weekend, I know a lot of that, in my opinion, was second half. They were up big and kind of looking ahead to the next week. But you had a touchdown game against UCLA, which doesn't look great on a resume. And right now, I think if you just individually looked at them, you could say, yeah, I could see Washington beating Oregon.
Right.
Yeah, I could see Washington beating Stanford. I could see Washington beating Washington State. They're going to be favored in all three of those games. But what you're asking them to do is to not have another blip on the radar. And I don't think they've shown enough to people confidence-wise to say,
right,
yeah, they're definitely going to run the table.
Well, and I think this just goes into the larger thinking, because I get what she's doing with the article. It's an undefeated thing, right? And Washington has the loss against Auburn. I get that. But I think... And we can talk to her in a couple weeks because the playoff rankings officially come out around the Halloween.
Right around Halloween, yeah.
And that maybe at that point we bring her on for the first week's rankings.
Usually about week eight, yeah.
Right.
So about 2 weeks away.
So I kind of just feel that maybe there is a feeling around college football because it continues to be more and more the Pac-12 this, the Pac-12 that. And I thought Isaac, I agree 100%. I heard Isaac yesterday as I was leaving say, you know, I know this conference gets made fun of and they're not highly respected nationally. I love it this year. I think it's a ton of fun. Take the game we get this weekend in Eugene. Yeah. I can't wait. I really can. As a guy that's not, I don't have a rooting interest for Oregon or Washington one way or the other. I'm looking forward to a good football game. I think you can look at a lot of football games that go on. USC Colorado is another great football game.
I can't wait to watch that game.
I have no clue who's winning these ones. And I think that's kind of what the conference is. So to me, having all the respect nationally, that's never really mattered that much. Some years you're going to have a playoff team, other years you're not. And right now the Pac-12 is kind of going through this lull of not being in the conversation with some of the other conferences. I just worry overall, Dirt, is what I worry about is a Washington, for example, going through the gauntlet the rest of the way, mm-hmm. even though we may not buy that that's possible. But if they do, will they really be considered? Because I'm listening to Joe Klatt this morning on Colin, and they're talking about playoff teams, and they're both in agreement with, well, you got to go Bama,
right?
Ohio State,
Notre Dame, Clemson.
Georgia. Like, they didn't even list Clemson. Yeah. They didn't list a Big 12. They damn sure didn't list a Pac-12. And so even though the nightmare scenario we talked about last week, it's brought back up yet again with a guy like Joe Klatt that knows college football well. And I'm Dusty and Cam will ask him a million questions on Friday about where the conference is and about this weekend's game. But I just worry that the conference is not going to get a fair shake because you can think this conference is not on the level of Bama. I'm not going to argue. Georgia, I'm not going to argue. Maybe Notre Dame, not going to argue. But if you're doing what you're asked to do, and that's run through your conference undefeated and win, you should be getting a seat at that table. That's a tough one for me to see not happening.
I could not agree more with you. If Washington wins out and they have wins on the road against Oregon, who I think will finish the season as a top 20 or top 25 team, you'll have a win at home against Stanford, who I know they've looked bad the last couple of weeks, but that's still a team with Bryce Love, I think, has the potential to win 8 games this year and finish borderline top 25. You would have a win at Washington State, a team that I think has proven to be much better than we thought coming into the year. Their offense is as good as anybody in the country.
They should be a top 25 team.
They should be, and I don't know why they aren't right now. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. And you would have a win over, likely it looks like at this point, Colorado, who is undefeated and probably going to be a 9-3, maybe a 10-2 Pac-12 South champion. Those would all be quality wins that you would have, not to mention a win over BYU, who I know they're not great, but they beat Wisconsin on the road. I think Arizona State's a solid football team. If that resume isn't enough to get you in, abolish the playoff. There's no point in having it.
Right.
And this goes back to the whole thing I argued during the non-conference of where's the benefit to play a game like Washington
played? Well, you'd be telling Washington you shouldn't have played Auburn. You should have played another Patsy.
You idiots, you should have played Tennessee, and you beat them by 45 points.
Yeah.
And you're going to make it into the college football playoff. It goes back to just simply, in my mind, what is a flawed system. If the Pac-12 champ has two losses, that to me, I guess, is a different argument, and it's hard to crack into that top four. But part of it, I have mixed emotions on it, because the playoff to me has been a step in the right direction for college football, and I feel like we've taken a right step in finding the true national champion. But the part of it that I don't like, and I think you're seeing this at certain programs, and you're seeing it definitely as a conference right now, is it's playoff or bust.
Right.
Like, that's the way we view the Pac-12. Is it a bad conference because we could have a second year in a row where we get left out of the playoff? And that, to me, is preposterous. This, I know the bowl record sucked last year. Yeah, they couldn't beat anybody. This, to me, is a good conference. I heard this segment yesterday, and I loved what Isaac said. Washington's a good team. Washington State's a good team. Mm-hmm. Stanford, in my mind, is a good team.
Oregon's a good team.
Oregon's a good team. Arizona State, to me, is a good team. Colorado's a good team. USC has only gotten better starting a freshman quarterback. Like, we're running up it. I mean, how many teams do you even look at in this conference?
I mean, Utah.
UCLA might be the only one that you look at and you say they suck.
Well, and I think you go to the bowl record again, because that's the thing everybody wants to hold against the conference. In fact, most conference fans, the Pac-12 fans that we have here in the Northwest and everywhere else, I mean, they cite that. Well, 1-8 bowl games. You had 9 teams in bowl games.
9 out of the 12 is pretty solid.
9 out of 12 went to a bowl game. Now, I think the measure of being 6-6, you're giving them a participation trophy with bowl games.
Right.
Sure, but you still had 9 of the 12 had at least 6 wins or more. Is this conference the best? No. But you know what? We get too caught up into counting titles, in the sense of, go back and look at Alabama, the couple years that they've won it during Nick Saban's tenure. The SEC wasn't good.
No.
They really weren't. Like, from top to bottom, you had 2 teams.
LSU, Alabama, for the most part.
Alabama, LSU,
maybe
Alabama,
Florida,
Georgia, maybe Alabama, maybe Florida. Like, you didn't have a 9-deep conference. And so, as you mentioned, it's kind of playoff or bust. I don't know what drives that. Like, I'll take the financial details. Like, it's not great for the conference that they're making $20 million less per school than these other conferences. I hope that gets fixed. That's out of my power. I can't control it. I can only bitch about that so many times before I realistically do not care. So if we don't care about the financials, then why are we screaming it's playoff or bust? What is that? I don't know what that stems from. So if they don't make the playoff this year, and people would probably say they won't, like Stuart Mandel came out, and I want to get to something else he wrote, but he came out and somebody asked about Oregon, as we have a listener at the Better Today text line saying, hey, why can't Oregon be in this conversation if they run? He cites the schedule's too weak.
Yeah, they didn't play anybody in non-conference.
But that goes back to the Washington thing. Washington did the same thing. They lost one time in their best game, or their toughest game, and they played nobody in the non-conference. So I don't know if Oregon is truly eliminated with the playoff conversation. Maybe they are. He seems to think they are. But this conference doesn't go to a playoff. That doesn't have to mean the conference is absolute garbage. This might be a weird year. It really might be a weird year, as we're at the halfway point now, where we look back and we go, oh, Notre Dame went undefeated. They're always going to be in when they're undefeated.
Sure.
Bama's in there. Shocking. Ohio State. Georgia.
Clemson.
It might be a weird year where you have 2 from 1, Notre Dame and the other, and you have these other conferences, your nightmare scenarios you put, and you have these other conferences looking and going, wow, we did what you asked, and we got the shaft.
Well, and this, to me, gets back to why I would love to see an 18 playoff. The argument that some make against me when I bring it up is it would take away the importance of the regular season, and I just simply don't believe that. Because right now, imagine if you had an 18 playoff format, you would have the 5 Power 5 conference champions all with an automatic bid. How awesome would that race be right now? to see who would win the Pac-12 and get that automatic bid into the playoff.
I mean, what would it add to this weekend's game?
Look how many teams are still alive. Oregon's alive. Stanford's still alive. Colorado, USC, Washington State, Washington. All these teams are still alive potentially to win the Pac-12.
I think you named eight teams there.
You can name half the conference almost, right, or more than that, of teams that still have a puncher's chance halfway through the season at winning the conference. Now, it's going to eventually get pared down. You know, maybe Oregon loses, or maybe Washington State loses, or maybe Stanford loses another one. And, you know, it's going to get coupled down. But as of right now, it would all still be alive. And we wouldn't be sitting here halfway through the season saying, man, it sucks that the Pac-12 is already eliminated from the conversation.
Right.
Because that's the way that it feels now.
Okay. We'll dive into this some more. We're way against it. So we got to come back. When we come back, we'll dive into that some more. And then also, is the problem with the conference, if you think there is a problem, you know, if you're one of those people that doesn't agree with me and Dirt that the conference is fun and it's entertaining this year, is it a coaching problem? Interesting point brought up. We'll do both those things next on The Fan. All right, we'll dive into the Oregon-Washington game at 1 o'clock. We'll hear from Chris Peterson. We got a loaded second hour. Feeling good. I like this weather. It's like not warm. I know it's going to get warmer later, but I kind of like where it's at right now.
I'm in a great mood today.
I'm too. I'm having a good Wednesday.
It's a good day. It's going to be like 70 and sunny for the next week.
Yeah,
it's
going to
get cold, though, at night once the clouds clear. Right. It's going to be like 40 at night.
I'm cool with
Bundle up, make a little fire.
It's like San Diego, man.
That's baby-making weather.
That's right.
Is it cold in that bedroom?
I got to get my fireplace swept. Warm it up. I got to sweep it out so I can start lighting fires again.
I'm going to give you one TMI note. I don't do this often on the show.
Okay.
You probably do it more than the rest of us.
Yeah, I never give out TMI. Well, I guess occasionally.
Literally last night. My youngest, who's two.
I don't know if I like where this is going.
Wakes up crying. And that's not unusual for us. Sure. She'll at some point in the night come into our bed. I'll just
Nightmare,
wake up.
Nightmare, stomach ache, whatever.
Anytime she wakes up, she's going to crawl into the bed. She wakes up at around 11:20, cries.
Mm-hmm.
We're wife and I are talking. We're in the bed. All of a sudden, we kind of roll up and like, hey, come on in. And right as she's walking in, before she can hear us talking, the wife goes, you were going to get some sex tonight.
Oh.
And I said, you're really going to drop that?
Now?
That's a
now?
Low blow.
Low.
I kind of feel like she's messing with you at that point. She was serious.
She doesn't say things like that often.
So did you pick the kid up and take her back to her room immediately?
Let's get a little drink of water. Have daddy read you a book.
How about I go grab some whiskey and put you right to sleep? What do you think, honey?
Rub it on the gums a little bit. I was very tempted. Yes, I was very tempted.
That's brutal.
All right, so we're talking Pac-12 football. I think you bring up a very good point. Like this notion, it has to be playoff or bust.
That's the way we view things now.
But like we don't have an Alabama, so why is it? Why is it that way?
See, I don't think this is a Pac-12. I think this is a country thing. I think everybody
around
the
country. It's the same for the Big 12. Yeah. I think it's the same for the ACC. I think it has to do with your conference having significance in college football.
What I just worry about, though, is like, and this is almost a Jim Mora point. When is enough enough, right? Like Jim Mora hit a point where they weren't winning 10 games anymore, and I get it, right? He's no longer good. But let's use the local examples here. If Chris Peterson doesn't get to a playoff this year or next year, and then 3 years from now, are we going to look, is anybody in Seattle going to look at him and go, I don't know, man, we should be getting back to that. We did that his second year, third year, what's going on? Mario Cristobal to Oregon.
Right.
I think they could finish potentially with 10 wins this year. They win this weekend, and it's going to be tough to find more than one loss the rest of the way.
Right.
Okay, he does it this year. He wins 10, wins 9. Wins 9. You know, I don't know about that. Like, I just worry that the expectation with a playoff, it messes with us too much to the point where we then question what we're clearly seeing as success. And that's the metric of college football that's tough. What's successful to one fan base is not to the other. If the Oregon State Beavers go to a bowl game next year,
you're thrilled.
I might cry.
You're jacked.
You might laugh at me about that. That's okay.
A prime example of that was
different
levels. A prime example of that was 2 years ago. Both Oregon and Oregon State were 4-8.
Yeah.
How did the opposing fan base feel about that 4-8?
Optimistic through the roof. Get that guy out of here.
The other guy got fired for going 4-8.
Vegas is lovely in mid-December.
Right. So I just worry that the playoff or bust mentality is going to ruin too many things. But I do, on that note, want to bring up Stuart Mandel, who does a mailbag every week. Somebody asked him about the Pac-12. He cites the late kickstarts, how that doesn't help the revenue, blah, 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 blah. But he says he ultimately thinks it boils down to this. Thinks the coaching is not up to par right now. In fact, he makes a really good point on this one, or actually a couple good points I want to read. The first one is, back then, you could say you had guys like Rich Rod, Leach, Mora had just joined the conference, Shaw, Oregon, and what they were doing with Chip. They had that moment. Now you look at it, and really, it's Leach, Shaw, and Whittingham with a lot of unknowns and unprovens within the conference. And he also points to the financials here per school. And what I mean by that is, right now in the Pac-12, you have just two assistants, Jim Levitt and Jimmy Lake, mm-hmm. making north of $1 million. Michigan alone has three people making that. So the financial commitment by these universities is not on the level of some of the other programs throughout the country. And he points to coaching as maybe why the conference is in the position they're in.
Yeah, I'm not buying that. I think the conference is in a point right now, this year at least, where you don't have a dominant team. I don't put that on Chris Peterson. Chris Peterson's taken a team to the college football playoff. I don't put that on Kyle Whittingham. I don't put that on David Shaw. I think there are a lot of really good coaches in this conference. And I think for the most part, the teams with new coaches, at least in this state, feel very confident about the direction their coaches are taking the team. I'm an Oregon State fan. If you took a snapshot right now of their optimism and their confidence level in Jonathan Smith, I'd say it's pretty high. What, based on what you've seen offensively, some of the younger guys, you can see the formula there. You're getting a lot of transfers coming in. And then you'd say the same thing about Oregon. Now, if Oregon gets blown out this weekend, maybe that changes. But he's at least shown there's some confidence here. He seems like he's the right guy. The program seems to be headed in the right direction. Peterson and Shaw, to me, are two of the more underrated coaches in the country. I think Mike McIntyre's proven himself as a head coach. Kyle Whittingham's proven himself as a head coach. I don't think it's a head coaching problem right now in the Pac-12.
When do you care about the playoff? For the conference, is there a point?
How many years in a row are you left out?
Well, let's say they don't make it this year, so it's this year.
No,
it's last year.
I won't freak out because I think you can look at scenarios next year where Washington's going to improve at the quarterback position.
I think Washington could be better next year, which is frightening.
You want to play my hypothetical of Justin Herbert coming back? They're going to be squarely in that conversation
right
if he returns for a senior season.
No
so doubt. you're going to have puncher's chances. It's just the difficulty is
they don't make it next year. Are you?
Yeah,
concerned?
It becomes an issue. It does. And I'm just going to continue to cry and moan until we get an 18 playoff. To me, it's a no-brainer fix for college football of having the five Power Five conferences represented.
Right.
Then we don't have to sit here and have this whole song and dance of, well, Alabama didn't play anybody in non-conference. Why doesn't it punish them? Alabama didn't beat anybody. Why doesn't it punish them? When you have a system where it's only four spots and certain schools are graded on different scales, you're going to get a lot of outraged fans. And if you had an 18 playoff, you wouldn't have that because you know, control what you can control, win your conference and you're in. And if not, maybe you have a year where the second place team, you know, say next year it's Washington and Oregon, but Washington beats them head to head and Oregon's right there at 11-1. You got a chance to get an at-large spot because there's three of those. To me, it's a no-brainer to fix this. And we're not having the same song and dance every year about it's playoff or bust or the bowl season sucked or does this conference deserve to get in? In my opinion, the five Power Five conferences are good enough that their champion should have a chance at least to go win a national title.
Yeah, it's interesting where the Pac-12 is right now and how people view it. But we'll see, man. We'll see what Washington can do this weekend. We'll stick with that. We have a loaded second hour. We have a lot of things. We have a very pressing question that's non-sports related, and it actually stems from a sport I can't talk about.
I'll lift your ban for today.
For the whole day?
Because this is a pretty juicy story.
There's a question stemming from a media day for a professional basketball team that we must ask. This may be its own segment. I don't know, but it may be its own segment. So we'll get to that. We need to settle it. We need to find out how people view it. Dirt has some really juicy basketball nuggets he wanted to dive into today. Dirt specifically. And so this Jimmy Butler story, by the way, is amazing.
Dude, this thing is nuts. We need to talk about Jimmy Butler.
Let me just fill you in real quick in case you're going to miss it. He screamed at the coach, the GM, and his teammates all day about how they effing needed him at Timberwolves practice today. He ran with the third stringers specifically so he could beat the first team and send a message to them. He is having all the teammates come out post-practice. They're asking questions. None of them want to talk about what he said. And he is sitting down as we speak for an interview set to air on ESPN tonight. The NBA is the best, and I can't wait for all the drama to unfold. So we'll get to that and then get to some weekend games. But let's start with the Oregon-Washington game this weekend. We'll dive into that. Should Duck fans feel confident about their matchup versus the Huskies? 55305 is the Better You Today text line. Hour 2, Dirt and Sprague, back with more on Portland Sports Leader 1080 The Fan.